What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps, episode 9. This is UFC ESPN 1. We are getting ready to rock and roll. This is fight week for your boy, Aljamain, the Funkmaster Sterling, a.k.a. the Human Backpack, a.k.a. the Human Anaconda, a.k.a. the Human Gen Sport. We are out here, and we are getting ready to rock and roll. Are you ready to rock and roll? Yeah, man. So I'm feeling good, feeling great. Can't complain. So far, so good. And right now, this is the fun part. Well, not really the fun part. This part is called the hurry up and wait period, where we're just trying to get past the days and hurry up and get to the fight, you know? So we're doing what we can, and we're just trying to make sure we stay sharp and fine-tune as much as we can on our way to weigh-ins. Then I can refuel and get back to being large and in charge, and then get ready to get into a good old-fashioned fist fight. Right away, let's get into it. The weekend rewind. All right, so last weekend, UFC 234 was a fun fight card, at least if I do say so myself. Looking back at that card, let's just start with the emotional weigh-in for Anderson Silva. That was a really heartfelt moment. I felt it. I don't know about you guys. I felt that. And when you look back at Anderson Silva's career, it's been phenomenal. He's still considered by many to be the GOAT, the greatest of all time, in his prime, and even now to still be fighting as long as he's been fighting and still being able to compete with these young bucks. It's super impressive, and I think a big testament to his skill, his durability over his career, and just that longevity to be able to still have your wits intact, to be able to do this for that long. It's not everyone gets to walk away as clean as he will be able to, hopefully, knock on wood, you know, hopefully nothing crazy happens from now until he decides to officially hang them up. If you do look back in history, you remember when he had that fight with Chris Weidman, he snapped his shin into, that was crazy. A lot of people did not think he was going to be able to come back, return the same, or even compete. And he's still doing that at a very high level, highly impressive, super impressive stuff. And I'm a huge Silva fan. I grew up watching that guy, and Adesanya did too, man. It was kind of cool to see that moment of the idols become your rivals. Now I'm sitting there watching, and Anderson Silva's getting choked up, and man, he brought some, you know, he got a little teary-eyed. I think he might have shed a tear or two. You know, as men, we pride ourselves on not ever showing emotion and trying never to ever cry because it's not considered manly. And sure enough, Adesanya pretty much did the same thing, and he had to catch himself and try to reel himself back in so that he didn't actually start bawling on national TV. But it was cool, man. That's a very heartfelt moment, very sentimental thing. I think that Adesanya is going to be able to take with him for the rest of his life. I think that's a huge thing that he's going to always be able to look back on and be like, that was a very dope, cool moment for me to share the octagon with this legend, Anderson Silva. First fight, Jim Crute versus Sam Alvey. He wins by TKO in the first round. Man, he landed that cross. Jim Crute landed that cross on Alvey, and Alvey looked like he was out of there. He was on wobbly legs, but he came back, and he seemed like he was doing all right, and then Goddard got involved and jumped the gun, did not give him a chance to rally back. If there was any time for him to stop it, I would have been, I don't even know, man. Yeah, you're on wobbly legs, but you're still in the fight. If you're still trying to intelligently defend yourself by moving, you're still in there. Sometimes you get punched and you get hit in these situations and you get rocked. And it's not like you can't react, but you're kind of frozen. And people are going to debate this either way. They're going to say, well, he was hurt. If he was never at that point, it would never have been in that situation. Well, it's a fist fight. What do you expect to happen? Guy's not trying to clip you and have you staggered and walking on chicken legs. So you're on chicken legs. You can still see everything that's going on. It's not like he wasn't all there. He was still there. He just didn't have that equilibrium underneath him. But it is what it is. Mark Goddard stopped the fight, I think, definitely too early. He had a thumbs up. He was trying to do his best. As soon as that happened, he got right up and he got in Mark's face and told him, like, who knows what he said. Maybe called him an asshole, you know. I think rightfully so. You took away the one opportunity, and now the hype train of Jim Crute is full steam ahead and is going to keep rolling. It was a good fight for as long as it lasted. And I'm impressed by Jim Crute, man. 22 years young, and it's going to be exciting to see how his career starts to unfold from here. Because Sam Alvey was no slouch, and to get past him, it's a pretty big feather in the cap. Sam Alvey has fought almost the who's who's of that entire division, coming up from 85, then now up to 205. So we're going to keep your eye out on Jim Crute, and let's see if the sky's the limit for this young kid. The next fight, Montana De La Rosa. She defeats Nadia Kasim. I don't want to say mispronounce her name. On bar, round two. And about halfway through that round, I don't really know if it was, if I could call it competitive. They were some back and forth moments, but it's not like damage was being landed by Nadia. Nadia is pretty young in her own right. I think they were both actually the same age. But it just seemed like De La Rosa was in the driver's seat a lot more, so to speak, for lack of better words. And she controlled and dictated the pace of the fight. Her wrestling seemed to be on par. Her jiu-jitsu was on par. Nadia had some real slick stuff that she was trying to get. I think she might have hit like one or two sweeps in there. But at the end of the day, De La Rosa, she reigned supreme. And I think that was like her third finish inside the flyweight division. So she's a girl to definitely keep your eyes out for, because she's coming into her own. As young as she is, she's got the solid wrestling base, and she's putting these girls away with arm bars and just submissions in general. And she can strike. She's got some hands too. She's got some solid kicks. And her husband, Mark De La Rosa, he's also in the 135-pound division. I touched on that a little bit last week on last week's episode. So she's got some good people in her corner with that Factory X team. So I'm excited about her. Just watching her fight with Rachel Ostovich in her last outing, she did really, really well in those transitions and managed to jump on that armbar and the rear naked choke. And just her transitions and going for stuff and not just being a passive grappler. She's actively looking to attack these limbs and situations and go out there and go for a finish. And that's what the fans want to see. Next up, we have Ricky Simone. He defeats Ronnie Yahya. Unanimous decision. Now, there was some stuff that looked kind of iffy for both guys. Ricky Simone hurt Yahya a few times, and Yahya hurt, I think, Simone once, maybe twice, and it looked like he was going to rally back with the hands. And it's just a weird thing. You fight a guy like Ronnie Yahya, you know what he's trying to do. It's like that Damian Maia style. He's coming in, he's just looking to get you down and impose his will with his jiu-jitsu. But Simone did a good job defending. Sprawl and brawl, landing the shots where he could. He didn't overcommit and get himself entangled up where he could possibly get taken down. And Simone's a tough wrestler. Now, with that being said, with Yahya's style, sometimes he catches guys coming in or going after them because they sleep when it's striking. And sometimes Yahya would just go, fuck it, full steam ahead, and he'll just start swinging these wild punches. And they'll end up catching guys because the takedown's not working. He's got to create some type of chaos in order to get inside so he could get his opponent down to the mat. I'm surprised we didn't see him trying to like dive in for the single and then pull to the half guard. He flopped a little bit. It wasn't like a full commitment to sliding into that deep half guard to try to get a sweep the way Damian Maia likes to do. He likes to get in close, and if you stop the shot, he'll throw you over the top with that underhook, and then he'll look to trap the leg with his top leg and try to drive his hip in, and then he's going to scrape the ankle, keep your mobility frozen so that he could come up on top, look for the sweep, and try to eventually take you down or get on top and look to pass that guard. So really slick stuff from both guys. Simone looked good, man. You know, he's getting by with these wins. I think his last two have been unanimous decisions now, but he's a tough competitor for sure. This is my weight class, also 135. I was actually supposed to fight Ronnie Yahya. Oof. That would have been a good fight for me. I'm just saying that would have been a good fight for me. But, yeah, man, it just kind of reminds me of his fight with Marab. And they had that one stat that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. First guy to finish a fight at the five-minute mark. What kind of stat is that? At the five-minute mark of the third round? That means the fight's fucking over. How the fuck can you be the first guy to win the fight at the 5 minute mark? There's no fight to be won because the fight's fucking over. The time has elapsed. The ref didn't waive the fight. 4 minutes and 59 seconds, like Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson via armbar over Ray Borg. Yes. But the 5 minute mark, the fight's fucking over. Regardless of what anybody wants to say, I know what Merab was going through in that fight. He had a pinched nerve from him shooting that takedown. And Simone did a good job defending with the guillotine, jumped into it, and Merab fell on his head sideways, a little bit sideways, which pinched a nerve in his neck. And I don't know if you guys ever felt that, but you get like this pins and needle feelings from your nerve all the way down from like your neck down to like your toes. It's the craziest fucking feeling. You're not out, but you definitely can't move your limbs. And Merab is just a tough, tough motherfucker where he fought knowing that there was a minute on the clock. He stayed in there, didn't tap, didn't verbally tap, didn't just go out. He fought, he moved his legs to show that he was still in the fight all the way into the bell, thinking that he got a break. He laid on the ground and relaxed. And then Simone got up and pointed and said he's out. And then Merab turned his head and looked at the ref because the ref came over and looked at him. And Merab said, "I'm not out. I'm okay." And they let the fight go and they never wait. He never did this, never waved the fight off. So was the fight waved off at the 5 minute and 59 second mark? A minute later, you decided after you talked to Mark Goddard and whoever else in hell you spoke to for confirmation to say that he was out. That makes no sense. Like, let's use logic here. And I like the New Jersey Athletic Commission, but goddamn, they didn't even give him a chance to appeal. That's fucked. That is fucked. They robbed him. Rob put a an absolute wrestling clinic on the wrestler in Ricky Simone. And obviously, this segment is supposed to be bigging up Ricky Simone, but damn, that's my teammate, man. And he looked great in that fight up until that last minute. That was like the one turning tide, and he survived. To go through all that pain to survive and then just have it taken away from you is kind of fucked up. It's like, well, what was the point of him doing all of that to show that he's tough enough to stay in the fight? It's like anyone else who was on Queer Street when they're stumbling around the octagon, like a Pat Barry Czech Congo fight. You could have jumped in the fight and stopped it at any given moment, but you allowed the guy to fight very end without his wits all the way about him. Merab had his wits about him. He just couldn't move for the few minutes. Not even a few minutes, for the few seconds that he was in that guillotine choke. And he defended everything the right way. His legs were still moving. People were trying to say when you're getting choked unconscious, you bicycle kick like that. He was doing full-on bicycle kicks. That's not like some little baby involuntary movements where you're choked out and you're twitching or you get knocked out and you're like, it was nothing like that. And that was my whole argument, but the call was made, whatever. We live and we learn. Merab moved on. He went out his next fight, won his next one, and whatever. But congrats to Ricky Simone. Great fight. That was a fun fight. Definitely for me. Obviously, our division, so it was fun to watch. Lando Venata decisions. Marcos Mirano, they got bumped up to the main card after Kelvin Gastelum and Robert Whitaker fell through. And that was a fun fight, man. I like Lando Venata. He's a fun fighter to watch. Fought my teammate his last fight. They fought to a draw. I think that was his second draw. Lando Venata's second draw in a row in the UFC. And it was nice to see him come back and get a good win. I remember when he came onto the scene, he fought Tony Ferguson. And it was a fun, fun fight. And it looked like the new UFC debutee was about to get it done. He was about to shock the world and take out Tony Ferguson, who was on like a 7-fight win streak at the time, or 8. Probably 7. But unreal for a guy on his debut to come in there cool as a cucumber. And he looked phenomenal. I just wish he used more head movement and was actually trying to defend the strikes. I don't know if that's just his style, but he's really slick on the feet. I think if he used a little bit more head movement and not let Ferguson get some clean shots on him, I think he walks away with that win and he would have been like catapulted right up to the top to title contention, honestly, because Ferguson was the man at that point. He's still the man. But at that point, he was like the next guy to get the next shot at the title. And for a debut guy to come in and do that was super, super impressive. But Venata took out Marcos Mirano. Kimura, round one at the end, had a good, nice little like body lock slam throw, slammed him down against Dao Zim. His name is Dao Zim, his ring nickname. That dude has some super long limbs. And Venata did the right thing. Went in there, got inside, and took his ass down and did what he had to do. So that was a fun fight. It was nice to see him get back in the win column. I'm a fight fan. Even though he fought my teammate, I like watching all these guys fight, man. And sometimes it gets a little weird because you start getting cool with these guys outside of the cage. And then if they have to fight someone you know or that you're really cool with, it could get a little awkward. But my teammate and him fought already, so it is what it is. That's in the past. And now I can go back to actually watching him fight and enjoying his work of art. That was the co-main event. Now, the main event, Israel Adesanya versus Anderson Silva, sick fight. A lot of people were saying on the internet that Israel took it easy. He didn't want to finish his idol. I call bullshit. I'm not buying it. If Adesanya could have taken him out, he would have taken him out. I think Silva was there to fight. The one time he got hurt, he ate the shot. And we all know that Adesanya is not the biggest puncher, but Silva took one of his cleanest ones. And even though he buckled a little bit, he still came back and he still looked great for the rest of the fight. Did what he could do against the younger younger bull. And Adesanya, he's a real threat, man. I think a lot of people are still hyped up to see what he does in the future. Obviously, he didn't get the finish, but it was still a fun fight. Anderson Silva and him made it super entertaining. Very little to, like, almost not. I think it was absolutely no wrestling whatsoever, but it was fun, man. I really enjoyed it. I think a lot of people did too, because we got to see a couple of high-level strikers in the UFC, and that was really, really fun. Fun stuff to watch. Next up, so this week we have Ngannou versus Velasquez on ESPN1. That's the main event. Jimmy Rivera and I will be the main event of the prelims, whatever that means for what it's worth. I guess the UFC thinks we're going to be an exciting fight to help bring more viewers coming into that main card transition. So hopefully we have a fun fight and it's exactly what they hoped it to be. And I think it will be, because sometimes it takes two to tango. But I think with my style, you know, in the past I could have been super passive and just let the fight come to me and just wait for my takedowns. But of late, I've been pretty good with pushing the pace and really trying to press the action. So I'm looking forward to this one. I'm super pumped. I'm super excited, and I really can't wait. The following week, we have on ESPN Plus 3, Błachowicz versus Santos, and that's in, I believe, Prague. And then, of course, March 2nd, John Jones versus Anthony Smith. And the co-headliner is Tyron Woodley, I'm Tyrone, versus Kamaru Usman for the World Welterweight title. Super excited for these fights coming up. We've got a lot of big fights on the horizon. What's next? All right, so that was our weekend rewind. Now let's shift gears and switch over to what's scrapnin' in the MMA universe. First up, I think this is a huge, huge talking point. Israel Adesanya, he lobbies for pay-per-view points. After Gastelum and Robert Whittaker fell through, if you guys didn't know, now you know, Robert Whittaker somehow, some way, suffered a crazy hernia in his abdomen. I don't even know how does this happen, but it happened. Crazy turn of events. His fight ended up getting scratched. I believe it was the morning of the fight. And now Adesanya brought up a good point. He was already the main attraction. I mean, Whittaker was a main attraction because obviously he's a, you know, he's over in Australia and whatnot, and people love him. He's a world champ, so people are coming to see him. But Adesanya being on the card was a huge plus, with Anderson Silva, another huge plus. Two guys that people probably don't get the chance to see very often fight, especially Anderson Silva. So if you got the opportunity to go see him and you're in the land down under, you're probably going to buy tickets and make your way over there to go watch that event. Adesanya brought up a good point. He was lobbying for the pay-per-view points. He was saying, now that the main event was scratched, where do the points go? There's money left on the table. Who gets that? Is it the pay-per-view provider? Do they clean that up? Because the points are there. The buys were there. They were sold, and people were still buying the night of the fight, probably during the prelims and getting ready for the main card. People were probably still buying. Something has to give. And he brought up a very valid point. He said, why not have Anderson Silva and I split it? I think that's very, very fair in terms of those are the two guys that really helped keep the card together. Because Had they not been on that card, who else would have helped carry that event? There would have been nobody else, and that kind of sucks. So I hope the UFC does right by them and gives them some type of piece of that. And Adesanya was honest. He said, I don't really know how the pay-per-view points work, but I know there's money out there, and I don't know who's going to get it, but I'd like to talk to Dana White, and we can try to figure this out. And I'm right there with you, brother. Hopefully something good comes out of that. It would be nice to see the fighters get taken care of. And again, I don't know if the pay-per-view company keeps that or if the UFC keeps that. But shit, or if they're going to take that and sprinkle it across all the other fighters in the roster, that'd be nice too. That'd be nice too. Ooh. But yeah, man, something gets sorted out with that. Now, during that fight, after the fight, Paul Acosta, he tweets and he says that scrawny clown won't last two rounds with me. And he's referring to Israel Adesanya. And if you know Paul Acosta, he's jacked. He's Yoel Romero jacked, built like a freaking goddess of fucking Rome or, I don't know, Egypt or something. Were Egyptians super jacked and ripped back in the BC era? I have no idea, but you guys get my comparison. And yeah, he was saying like he'll break him. I remember Adesanya called him out. I think it was maybe one or two fights ago, but that fight never ended up coming to fruition. This fight ended up happening. And yeah, I would like to see that hopefully sometime down the future. I believe they're both also undefeated. So that is a highly, highly interesting matchup. Wyman also tweeted saying that he believed Adesanya is overrated. And I know Adesanya fired back on an interview, I believe, on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani saying, let these guys find out how overrated I am. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to that and seeing how that plays out. But yeah, man, that 85-pound division is really, really starting to shape up really, really nice. And you had some guys leave the division like Santos. He was a huge player. Now he's up at 205. Wreaking havoc up there with those guys at the light heavyweight division. And so is Anthony Smith, who was also fighting at 185, now at 205, and having great success going up a weight. Connor attacked the shit out of Kelvin Gastelum and his worms. He was saying, why, and this is per him, why is he allowed to shake, quote, our fans' hands? And he was talking about what was it? He had like a lot of wingworm on his face that a lot of people were calling out and saying like, what the hell is going on? And yeah, man, I couldn't figure out what exactly that was either. And he had something on the back of his neck. And someone said it looked like his neck was trying to take a dump or was pregnant and trying to push the baby out. But people were leaving to the internet to say some funny ass shit. And to give you a good laugh, especially Twitter. I love fucking Twitter. It's the best. And Connor also said to, quote, sterilize that belt immediately, end quote. Also, Connor News. How funny is that? Connor News. Everything's starting to become Connor News. But Connor says to answer Silva, because Silva said he would like to fight in Curitiba. He said maybe against Nick Diaz. Connor says book it. And he'll fight there too. And he'll fight Nate Diaz. That would be the trilogy. That would actually be pretty sick. That would be a huge and fun fight. I think that does easily anywhere from 1 to 2 million buys. As people want to see that saga, that 1-1 split, that rubber match would be actually really fun and entertaining for everyone to watch. But we'll see what happens. But Gastelum did respond. He did respond. And he's saying Connor is spreading disease all over Ireland, spreading his seed, having babies, and not claiming them. That's a nasty one. That's a low blow. That is a low blow. I don't know. I'm not in the baby mama drama business. You know, I'm trying to stay out of that. But goddamn, that was a shot. That was like a shot from like the fucking shoddy yaddy. Boom. Right to the chest. That was the 38 special probably. But that's interesting because I've been seeing a lot of those news flowing around about Connor having a baby and not claiming them. And the lady is saying she's a single mother now because of him. Jesus, man. Why don't you guys wear rubbers? You guys, fuck. You're Conor McGregor, but goddamn, wear a fucking rubber. If you are doing that, wear a goddamn rubber. I just don't understand people who get caught up in shit like that. It really, to me, it makes no sense whatsoever. Fight news just announced. David Branch is taking Jack Hermanson on in Philly. That's March 30th. Jack Hermanson versus David Branch. Cody Stamann is stepping in for Song Yadong to fight Alejandro Perez March 2nd in Vegas. That's the huge fight card with John Jones, Anthony Smith. And the co-headliner is Tyron Woodley versus Kamaru Usman. That should be a fun fight. That card is stacked. Stacked from top to bottom. Amanda Nunes, she says she wants to fight Holly Holm. She's the only UFC champ she hasn't fought yet. So, I don't know. We're going to see. There's a lot of fun fights on the horizon coming up. And things that are happening in the MMA universe. Oh, shit. And I forgot. Johnny Strip Walker. Oh, that's a good fucking name. Johnny Strip Walker is fighting short notice against Misha Cirkunov at UFC 235. Misha Cirkunov had an opponent pull out. I forgot who his opponent was. I would have to look that up. But he's stepping in short notice. He was the one who threw that hook kick and came back with a spinning back fist at UFC Fortaleza and got the win over Justin Lede in like 30 seconds of the first round. So he's unscathed and he bounced right back. And this is a big card for him to be jumping into. So can he pull it off and end on just keep the bandwagon rolling, keep the hype train rolling? We're gonna find out. Back injuries, they're delaying UFC champ Daniel Cormier. He's saying he's canceling his retirement at 40. I guess he's sticking around a little longer. And we're going to see when that swan song is actually going to officially happen. Now, next up, we have the main scraps. First up, Andre Feely versus Miles Jury. Fun fight. Both guys have been kind of up and down in the career. Of course, you know, alternating between wins and losses, stringing wins together. And this is the name of the game. Sometimes that's the way the game goes, and there's nothing you can really do about that. But that should be a fun fight for the fans. I'm excited for that one. I think, when was Feely's last fight? I would have to look. Here we go. So Andre Feely's last fight was to Michael Johnson. He lost split decision. Before that, he won a split decision against Dennis Bermudez. He beat Artem Lobov before that via unanimous decision and lost to Calvin Kattar via unanimous decision. Andre Feely is a plus 135 favorite via Bovada odds. Bovada, B-O-V-A-D-A. And Miles Fury Jury is a minus 165 favorite. Jury's last fight was a loss, round one, a big overhand, and then ground and pound by Chad Mendes. Before that, he won a unanimous decision against Rick Glenn. And before that, he beat Mike De La Torre via round one, ground and pound stoppage. And before that, he lost to Charles Oliveira, the submission specialist, via guillotine choke in round one. So, seems like he's winning in round one and he's losing in round one. It's kind of tough. This is a really close fight. I'm surprised it's not a pick 'em. Touchy Feely is a super tough dude, pretty well-rounded. I think he can hang with just about everybody. He's fought pretty much the who's of this division. So I'm looking forward to that fight and seeing what happens. But before I continue with the main card, I wanted to just give a shout out to, well, not really a shout out. I just wanted to say Henan Barao is taking on Luke Sanders. He's a former UFC world champ, someone who I've actually competed against in the octagon, and I was looking forward to it for a very, very long time. And I got the opportunity to fight him. I came away with a unanimous decision win, and he's on the ESPN Plus early prelim slot. And it's kind of crazy to see a guy like this who Dana White pegged as the greatest of all time and the pound-for-pound champion when he was on top of the world, dominated everybody before TJ Dillashaw beat him twice. And then he lost to Jeremy Stephens and then myself, and then he lost a few more times after that. So he's on a little bit of a downward swing, but it's always fun to watch him fight, especially for me, because that was such a – he was one of the greats of this division, and to see him come back with a win would be really, really nice. If not, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with him at this point, but I know Brazil still loves that guy. All right, and back to the main scraps. We have Vicente Luque versus Brian Barberina. Now, Vicente, his odds are a minus 375 favorite. Wow. So you guys who like betting, he is a minus 375 favorite as of today via Bovada versus Bam Bam Barberina, who is a plus 285 underdog. Now, Vicente Luque, his last win, chronological order, it was Jalen Turner, round one, TKO via punches, then Chad Laprise, round one, via TKO via punches, then Nico Price, round two, via Darce choke, and then before that, he lost to Leon Edwards, unanimous decision. So he's on a tear right now, three-fight win streak. He has pretty much killed his competition for the most part. We're going to see what's gonna happen with this now. Now, Bam Bam, he's the upset king. Usually, he takes out these guys that the UFC pegs him against to lose to. And I'm not saying they purposely do this, but they do tend to match guys up with... And don't kill me for saying this, but I think they put them... You know, sometimes they're trying to build certain guys and they kind of want to slowly build fighters like the Sage Northcutt fight. I think Brian Barberina was put in there to give him a tough fight, but still a stepping stone for Super Sage Northcutt. They were in the Sage Northcutt business, not the Brian Bam Bam Barberina business. So if you guys follow what I'm trying to say, both these guys have both lost to Leon Edwards. Brian Barberina, he lost to Colby Covington decision. That was in 2017. He beat Joe Proctor via round one knees and punches. Then he lost to Leon Edwards, and that was a unanimous decision. He had a fight with Jake Ellenberger that got canceled, but then he ended up fighting him a couple months later, and he got the finish round one via punches. So this is a close fight, in my opinion. Barberina's a tough motherfucker. You can't count that dude out, but it looks like the odd makers are doing just that. So will Barberina defy the odds once again? I do not know, but we're going to find out soon. And once again, Vicente Luque is a minus 375 favorite. Brian Bam Bam Barberina is a plus 285 underdog. And if there's anybody who likes to bet, I think that's definitely a fight to probably put the money on and take your chances of possibly getting the upset, because he's done it in the past. So we're going to see if he can actually go out there and do it again. Now, real quick, I just want to give a shout out to my new sponsors, Trendy Butler. These guys have been great so far to work with. I'm really excited to do some business with these guys in the future for the long term and see what we can build with each other. And if you guys don't know Trendy Butler, go check them out, trendybutler.com. And it's pretty simple. It's like you're having your own fashion stylist on a monthly basis. For $65 a month, you can have these guys style you up with your type of trend, your type of style, the things that you're into, and they will ship it directly to your house on a monthly basis, so you get fresh linens every single month. And all you got to do is pay $65, and you can be styled up. Nice and easy. The prices, so you're not getting cheap shit. You're getting some name brand quality stuff that they're sending, some really designer and fashionable things. And I'm excited to rock some of this shit on Fight Week for Media Day. I'm going to be styling in my Trendy Butler, styling in my shoes. And also, big shout out to, of course, High Performance Nutrition, HPN, my sponsors, the guys who have been with me for a very, very long time. Now, back to the main scraps. Alex Bruce Leroy Caceres at a plus 260 underdog, actually. He's taking on Cron Gracie. This is going to be the debut of Cron, big high-level BJJ practitioner. A lot of people are looking forward to the debut of this guy. Obviously, with the name Gracie, everyone's going to be tuning in trying to see how you handle your first fight, your first big fight in the big show, which is, of course, the UFC. So we're going to see how he does. He is actually 4-0 as a pro, and I believe all finishes, armbar, triangle, rear naked choke. Caceres, he's been around the block for a while now, 35, 45, the Ultimate Fighter. I believe he started on the Ultimate Fighter at 55 and started, like, slowly making his way down. to the bantamweight division, had about 10 plus fights at the bantamweight division, and now he's back up at 45. He's 5'10", man, so he has a really, really big frame and a 73.5-inch reach. So I'm not exactly sure the reach of Kron, but we're going to find out, see if maybe that plays a factor. And I'm not exactly sure how tall he is. I'm not getting those stats as of yet. Yeah, so we're going to find out what exactly happens with this one. Alex has been looking good. His last one, he won by split decision over Martin Bravo. And before that was a couple of other tough ones. I got my cousin calling in. He doesn't know this isn't a live, actual podcast, but we'll see what happens. I got to give him a ring back. Next up, we have Courtney Cast Iron Casey. She is a plus 230 underdog, and she's taking on Cynthia Calvillo. I fought on the card with her, I think, once or twice at this point now, and she is a negative 300 favorite. Courtney's ranked 11th. Cynthia's ranked 12th. This should be a fun fight. Courtney's last fight, she beat Angela Hill by a split decision. Before that, she lost twice to Michelle Watterson and Felice Herrick, both by split decision. So she's coming up short just by a little, just one change of a judge, and she could be on a 3-fight, even 4-fight win streak right now. So far, things have been going really, really well. Could have been going really, really well for her, but she's a tough opponent. I don't know if you guys watch her, but she's very crafty, long, rangy. She uses her range well, and I think she's solid on the ground from what I remember playing with a little BJJ. She's a former D1 soccer player who switched to MMA when her soccer career ended due to injury. So it's nice to see when people from other sports, certain things happen, but you can always still find a way to get in there and fist fight. Calvillo, she won her last one in Argentina, rear naked choke over Paulina Baltejo out in Argentina. I believe that was, I think I was actually there for that one. Her last one before that, she lost a unanimous decision to Carla Esparza. A lot of people might have thought she won that one. And before that, she beat Joanne Calderwood and Pearl Gonzalez. Man, and Pearl Gonzalez is actually on a tear right now. She's having a lot of success back at the Invicta. And I believe she's an actual champ right now. So, yeah, man, a lot of good stuff. Next up, we have the number 10, James the Texecutioner Vic, who is a minus 120 favorite. Actually, he's not even a favorite. This is a pick 'em because Paul Felder is ranked 14th. The Irish Dragon is a minus 110 betting odds. So when I just found out when there's two negatives, it's not that they're both favorites. It's a pick 'em fight. Vic is 1-0 against common opponents to anyone who has fought Felder. Justin Gaethje was his last outing, was a very short night in the first round, about a minute and 30 seconds in. Before that, him and Paul Felder were actually supposed to fight, but that fight ended up getting scratched with all the chaos at UFC Brooklyn when Ally Quinter stepped up to fight Khabib. Francisco Trinaldo, he beat that guy, he beat Joe Duffy, and he beat Polo Reyes. And those were, the only one that was a decision was against Francisco Trinaldo. So, James Vick has been on a tear, man. He was doing really, really well. I know he called out for him to get some shine with the big boys at the upper echelon of the weight class. And he had his shot against Justin Gaethje. He dropped the ball, so we're going to see how he does with this one on his first fight back in trying to get back into the win column. He's fighting the commentator, the voice, the Irish Dragon, Paul Felder. This should be a tough fight. Mr. Spinning Shit, knees and elbows. He's has a lot of bloody fights. His last fight, he's also coming off a loss, a split decision loss to a Mike Perry, stepping up to challenge Mike Perry. And before that, he beat Charles Oliveira in the second round, who's also currently on a tear in that division right now. Charles Oliveira is on fire. So Paul was able to get it done, stop the onslaught of submission attempts, and come back and finish Charles Oliveira in that second round. And before that, he finished Stevie Ray via ground and pound in round one. Now, the main event, Francis Ngannou, who's ranked number 3. He's fighting Cain Velasquez. Cain hasn't fought in a little over 950 days. That's about 2 years and some change. My main thing is, will Cardio Kane be back in prime form? He beat Travis Brown. That was his last outing, and that was in 2016 in July. Man, that's such a long, long time ago. Ooh, I'm getting chills, man, because Kane is a former champ. You know, he came up short to Fabricio Werdum fighting at altitude, and it was a rough fight. We all seen how that one went. And then he came back with that one win over Travis Brown after being out for so long. So we're going to see if the Kane of old is back, or is this the passing of the guards for sure with Francis Ngannou and restaking his claim as the number one contender in that division to get another shot at the belt and maybe even take on DC before DC, as he says, hits his final swan song. Ngannou, his last fight was a knockout win over Curtis Blaydes. And before that, he lost to the lackluster performance. Obviously, I can say that because a lot of people also felt the same way. Let's just say it wasn't very entertaining against Derrick Lewis. And his fight before that was a loss for the world title against Stipe Miocic. But this is a fun fight, man. He hasn't had much time off in between the Curtis fights. This is about to be like the third month. So it's kind of a, I don't want to say fast turnaround, but this should be good to see where he's at. You know, he's coming off a win. He's on a high note. Will the Francis Ngannou of old, who is putting everyone away, be the guy that shows up against Cardio Kane? Because if that fight gets out of the first round, I just hope he's been doing the right thing, training his wrestling and making sure he's going to put up his best fight against the vicious Cardio Kane. You don't see heavyweights with that type of cardio at all. Now, Ngannou is a plus 155 underdog, and Cain Velasquez is a minus 190 favorite. Now, let's switch over to the leftovers. Now, these are some leftover things that I want to talk about. Last minute things. You know, we had the high school wrestling championship. One of my wrestlers made it to the finals. You know, he came up short like I did. I took second in the county finals, which is what we call the state qualifier. Tough kid. The week before, he was doubting himself because he took second in a qualifier to go to counties. And he said, if I can't even win the qualifiers, you know, how am I going to be good enough to place in the county? And, you know, I had to talk some sense into him a little bit. And I was glad to see him pull through and make the finals. I don't think we had a Baldwin finalist in God knows how long. And it was cool for me to be there to actually witness that and see him, all his hard work. He thought he wasted 5 years of schooling. And I tried to tell him, like, dude, you didn't waste 5 years of training in wrestling. If you haven't learned anything from this sport, then I don't know what the hell you've been doing with this entire time with all these ups and downs. Wrestling made me who I am. It teaches you about life. There's nothing that's going to be harder than this. And we also had another kid, Jaleel Treasure. He placed in the county, took six. He was also one of our other seniors. And our other senior, Paul Ware, didn't place, but he lost in the blood round. One more match. He was right there. And I don't know. You know, sometimes we have these, we malfunction under pressure a little bit. And I could truly relate to being in that position and coming up short when you're right there on the cusp of doing something great that you trying to realize your dream. It would have been nice if all three of our seniors placed, but Matt Kong made the finals. Paul Ware qualified, got some big bonus points for the team. You know, didn't all county, but he did his thing, tried his best, and I'm excited for him. I think he wants to compete in some BJJJ. BJJJ, I just said three J's. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Dust. But he wants to compete in some Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Judo, because he's actually started in Judo, or maybe even wrestle in college. So we'll see what happens for that kid. Those are my boys, and I felt something going back, being in that tournament one more time and getting to be in those kids' corner all the way through those tough moments. And it just made me remember how much that pressure gets to kids and can crack you if you're not mentally all there with your head on right, ready to go. But training week was good. You know, This is it. This is fight week. It's time for us to go. It's time for us. It's time for me to just go out there and get it done. All the hard work finally comes to for me to realize this one dream, and I'm about to go out there and see what happens. You know. Someone commented something on my Instagram saying something like, "And what happens if Jimmy kicks your ass?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know, motherfucker. Jimmy kicks my ass. What the fuck do you want me to say to you? That's life. Sometimes you win some, sometimes you don't. But I plan on winning this one, so I really don't give a shit. I'm gonna go out there. I've been working, busting my ass, been grinding, putting in sweat equity. And what you can do is leave that up to chance. And you know what they say, the harder you train, the smarter you train, the luckier you get. And that's what I'm hoping for. Outside of that, I've been doing really well with my diet. I'm trying to stay super hydrated before I get on the plane. The plane retains, it retains water, like keeps you bloated for whatever reason with the gravity and being so high in the air and the pressure. I have no idea how that shit all works, but I'm gonna be in that chair. Whoever's sitting next to me is gonna have to deal with me going back and forth to the bathroom because I think I got a corner spot. If not, fuck. I hope I'm not in the middle of everybody. So far, so good. This morning, I woke up about 47.4. And this is the last final stretch, and I'm just hoping this could be as easy as we can possibly make it and get ready for Saturday morning weigh-ins and then get ready to get into a fist fight. But I've been doing a couple of diet researches on some things, and I've noticed some stuff, some things I've just been learning about proteins, and I don't know, this stuff was fascinating for me. Learning about sugars and things like that. I just learned that I had to learn this stuff in college, that there's 20 types of amino blocks out there, and there's only 9 that are essential amino blocks. And that pretty much means that, and this was a refresher, that our body does not make these. So we have to go get it out there from food. And as we all know, like protein, they help with the building blocks for lean tissue, body regulation, supportive immune function, all these things that your body has to do on a daily basis from the nervous system. You got to keep that body strong from a cellular level. I can never say that word. From a cellular level. It always sounds funny, like, but there's a lot of things you can eat from that, like fish and eggs. They provide all the essential amino acids in high enough concentrations, which we call complete proteins. But stuff like plants, you know, beans, the lentils, the tofu, I just saw that all those things are like incomplete proteins. So when you have proteins, people try to say like the plant protein is inferior, but it's not. You just got to eat various kinds of it to get the entire chain block from everything, and then you can get all the essential amino acids that your body actually needs. So just a couple little tidbit in case you guys are wondering about that. And one thing about the plant protein, people will start to realize that scientists are starting to see that vegetarians tend to be healthier and tend to be leaner, and it's mainly because those plant types of proteins, they tend to have more fiber and less fat and less saturated fat, and those are the things that can help lead to weight gain, especially sugar, and that's a whole nother beast. I'm just learning about this stuff more and just reminding myself out of all the stuff that I know from when I was in school, but I don't really know how to articulate it the best way. I just know my body can't have certain things when I'm trying to have these extreme crazy weight cuts to get down. The other thing I learned about was this one I didn't really know in college was the vitamin E. You know, that's a antioxidant because our body constantly gets these free radicals. And they were saying in these videos on YouTube that just 8 milligrams a day could cut the risk of Alzheimer's disease in half. That's unreal. Just vitamin E. And the thing about vitamin E, there are 8 types of it. But when you take supplements, they only have 1 type. And the supplement companies are legally allowed to call these vitamin E. And it's crazy because if this is what I'm being told via the video, if we have too much of one form of that one vitamin E, it will reduce the way our body absorbs all the other ones. So we have to make sure we're getting it from a whole, like our food sources. We have to make sure we're doing the right thing. Otherwise, we mess up the natural way our body is supposed to, I guess, work, if that makes any sense. So yeah, man, I've been studying, learning a couple of things, and trying to edumacate myself. Next up, we have the fan section, hashtag Ask the Weekly Scraps. I'm going to see what questions we have from our viewers. A couple people got their questions in. Let me see. Alejandro Cervellos, no question. Just want to see you get back in the winning streak and fight for the straps. Thank you, my brother. Who do you see? Who do you have winning, John Jones versus Anthony Smith? I got to break that fight down again, but I'm definitely leaning towards John Jones. I know Anthony Smith is going to be a huge, huge underdog. And I think the ground game and the distance control is the reason why the bookies have it booked like that. And that was Richards' question. Alex De Ascola. Who are the fighters you like to watch more and why? Nate, the Diaz brothers, Conor McGregor, just studying the distance. Ally Quinta, just to study his focus and the tempo and the energy he brings to the octagon. Wyman, Damian Maya, and I like seeing those guys in their grappling exchanges. There's a lot of guys I like watching. I really feel like I learn a lot from just about everyone. And from question from Woody, would you win in the eating competition? Who would win between Cerro and Longo? I don't know, man. Both those guys love food. They love their Italian food, but they've been doing really, really well with their diet. And they both, I think, respectively, have lost about 20 and maybe, I think, 40 or 50 pounds. Longo's been looking real trim these days, and it's good, man. Health is wealth. No matter anything you have, you can't enjoy life unless you have your health. From Frank B, Aljo, if you could pick a signature finishing technique that would finish your fights, power on the ground, what would you prefer? I'm okay with the submission, man. The submission, the art of the grappling, and if guys start covering up, then you just beat their ass via ground and pound, and they start to just give you their limbs and makes it easier for you to get those subs. So that's the way I see these things. But, guys, I'm going to have to go. It's time for me to get ready and get this show on the road. Tune in this week. I would answer more questions for you guys, but I gotta go. And if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit or Spinning Backfist.